through our signature education conference held each October. This conference delivers the most up-to-date information on breast cancer diagnosis and treatment and a mobile mammography unit. Please mark your calendar for October 3rd, 2020 at the Wilder Center in St. Paul, and we hope to see you there. And finally, through increased ongoing resources on our website and social media channels available 24/7. If you are unable to attend any of our previous webinars, recording of these sessions are available on the BCEA website at breastcancereducation.org under the webinars tab. This is a great way to easily access valuable information at your convenience. The BCEA also welcomes your involvement in our organization. We welcome participation on all levels and have many different types of volunteer opportunities available, whether it's just for an hour a year or a couple hours a month. We have exciting plans for 2020 and hope that you can help us deliver education and empowerment to those fighting breast cancer. If you have not done so already yet, please be sure to connect with us on our social media. We regularly share and foster discussion on the latest news and resources in breast cancer detection, diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. We also encourage you to share what you learned today using the hashtag BCEAWebinar. Please be sure to also keep your eye out for more information on our upcoming webinars. We will share specific information on all sessions as soon as details are available. And now I'd like to introduce our panel leader for today's webinar, Kyle Woody. Kyle believes that one of the biggest and most important challenges a man can face in his lifetime is engaging as a caregiver for a loved one with a catastrophic disease like cancer. And he believes every man has the potential to rise to that challenge and bring to it his boldest and most confident self. Reflecting on his experience as a primary caregiver for his spouse with metastatic colon cancer, he realized many of the same principles of excellence, leadership, and teamwork that he preached in professional career should have been applied at home in his caregiver role. In 2014, he co-founded and became executive director of JACC's Caregiver Coalition, an organization whose mission is to improve the way men think, feel, and act in their role as a cancer caregiver. Welcome, Kyle.
Thank you, Ann. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
All right. Thank you so much for that introduction. We'll get right to it. I'll just give you a brief, give you guys a brief overview of how we're going to approach this. We're going to first introduce our other panelists, Mr. Kramer and Mr. Mulligan. Then we'll do a brief overview of our mission and how we achieve it, and then we'll go to the meat, you know, what we're here for. We want you guys to happen to the holidays rather than the holidays happening to you. And all along the way, we hope for you guys to be engaged. We hope to get a lot of questions and a lot of interaction from the crowd. All right, so first, Mr. Kramer. Mr. Dan Kramer is husband to Cassie. He's a brother, he's a dog dad, caregiver of metastatic breast cancer since July 2018 and counting, a diehard Chicago Cubs fan, competitive backgammon player, avid cook, reader, movie buff, wine lover, co-founder of Grassroots Solutions and Windpoint. He's a coach, a Windpoint coach, St. Paul resident, and St. Paul JACC's Caregiver Clash Facilitator, a JACC's member since 2018. Then we have Mr. Hugh Mulligan. He's a husband of a triple-negative breast cancer survivor, Angela, father to Audrey, who's five. He's a caregiver, attorney, Boston native. Yes, he likes the Patriots. Consumer of information, always curious, a Minneapolis resident, and a JACC's member also since 2018. And with that, we'll get right into unpacking our mission. So our mission, as Ann said, is to improve the way that men think, feel, and act in their role as a cancer caregiver. And improvement, you know, we're not, it's progress, not perfection. These guys aren't broken. We're not trying to fix them. around ideas. We just want to give them access to the best ideas. We want them to feel bold enough to build a team, confident enough to lead it. And when we talk about behavior, that's where the rubber meets the road. And oftentimes, a lot of what we're talking about there is asking for help, if not insisting on it. A little bit about how we accomplish our mission, just a couple of our programs. Help, I'm a caregiver. We think of this as cancer caregiving 101. Jack to Jack, think of Firefly Sisterhood. There is, it's a very similar model. We match men who are in the caregiving situations for one-on-one connections. Our caregiver Clatch, which Dan is a leader in this program. We have these twice a month in the Twin Cities for caregivers, and you can read about more about those on our website. There's one held in Minneapolis the first Thursday of the month, and then one in St. Paul is the third Wednesday of the month. And then we have every month at least one men-only, more respite-oriented event. You can see indoor skydiving here. We've done go-karting, extreme sandbox, and a whole plethora of other things. If you go to our events page, you can see a whole list of things that we've done in the past and see what's coming. We also have a podcast. We issue monthly episodes. Mr. Kramer has been a guest on our show, episode 11, if you want to hear more from Mr. Kramer. And then actually this month we're about to post a new episode probably later today from Kelly Groslogs, who is an oncology psychotherapist. So we seek out leaders in the space and share their lessons learned on our podcast. And then we have a very active blog space. There are a multitude of topics that you can drill down into. One of them that I recommend a lot is Tips for Caregivers. A lot of stories written by our members there, and then a whole host of other things as well. When I think about how you guys can support us, there's a lot of ways. You know, there's obviously, like any nonprofit, we accept donations and appreciate being followed on social media, so on and so forth. But specifically, we have a store, and I thought it might be fun for the participants to consider getting their loved ones a gift from our store for the holidays. And you can check that out at the website there, jackscaregiverco.org/store. And with that, I want to jump right in and turn it over to our first panelist, Dan. And we have this just so everyone knows, we're going to talk first about things we did that worked for the holidays, things we wish we'd done differently, and then things that we continue to struggle with. So you'll hear from each of us, and I'll just we'll start with Dan first. Dan, take it away.
Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. Thanks for being part of this. As Kyle said, my name is Dan Kramer. My wife, Cassie, was originally diagnosed with early stage breast cancer in 2002, but we caught it early, and we thought we had won. We thought we were done with it until the summer of 2018, about 15 months ago, when she began experiencing really extreme exhaustion, and after a number of tests, was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer that has spread to both of her lungs. And so we are 15 months into that and into our second holiday season with metastatic breast cancer. And as I reflect back on the start of this holiday season and last holiday season, this one so far is going a lot better than last year, which I would charitably call a disaster. But when I think about the things that have helped us in the holidays, you know, it really starts with asking for help. we have a lot of traditions, a lot of events we host and attend, and realized pretty quickly that we couldn't do everything, which takes us into the second point of really adjusting our expectations and adjusting what the holidays meant to us and what they were going to be like for us. One of the things we have started to do this year that we did not do last year is really to create some new traditions for what we think of as our new normal or our different situation now. And we realized last year that that was super important when we did almost all the same things last year that we had done before Cassie was diagnosed. And we just found that we were so much sadder when we compared kind of our traditions now to our traditions before. They just made us sad. And so we realized we have to begin to build in some new traditions that reflect our new reality. And then we've learned that we have to build in a lot of downtime, both during the holidays themselves, but also escape time. So after Thanksgiving, we left town for a couple of days, and we're lucky enough to be able to do that, but really use that time to recharge and reconnect as we now head into Christmas and Hanukkah, which are both big holidays for us. And then I would say that the final things is we really learned that we have to lean into gratitude, that while we are super sad of all that we've lost and all that's changed, you know, we try to be grateful for what we have right now and today and not look backwards with nostalgia and as much as possible, not look forward with all the angst we have. But really try to lean into the gratitude for the now. And then finally, we found that we have to really manage the expectations of family and friends, that our situation is different, Cassie is different, I'm different, our energy levels are different, our resilience is different. What people can expect from us is different than what they've grown to expect over a lot of years. And so we've had to actively manage expectations, and I'm happy to talk more later about how we've done that. And then overall, I would just say we've lowered the bar when it comes to the holidays. We still are trying to enjoy this season and to, as Kyle says, happen to it and not have it happen to us. But part of doing that is not just managing the expectations of others, but our own expectations and just lowering the bar on what we're doing. So I'd say those are some things that I've done, that we've done, that have worked.
That's great. Thank you, Dan. And I like how you said that things that we've done, sort of reminding us that we're not on our own here. And so we'll shift over here to Hugh. Hugh, share if you could share with us some of the things you've done that worked.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, everyone, for joining this webinar. And first, thanks to Dan. That's obviously a wonderful list of things that worked, and mine is largely piggybacking off of his. My wife was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer in October of 2017. Has been cancer-free since May of 2018. So really, her fight was 16 rounds of chemo, and the kind of the teeth of it fell right at the holiday season, which is one of the reasons this webinar opportunity kind of caught my eye. So with that said, one of the real challenges in our house was our daughter was 3 at the time, so she wasn't quite for lack of a better word, lucid enough to kind of understand the brevity of the situation. But she certainly understood that it was Christmas time and Santa was coming and things like that. So one of the things we really tried to do was to make sure Christmas was still Christmas. You know, it was, you know, Santa's coming and let's make cookies, you know, any type of little thing that you would have, your own family tradition. We proceeded in that regard as if there was nothing else going on, because that was because we knew, you know, we took the optimistic approach that, you know, the Christmas after and everyone in the future would return to some sense of normalcy, and we don't want to skip a tradition just because of the cancer diagnosis. But also it really did help with just the stepping outside of the world of cancer and inside of the world of holidays and really enjoying the moments, because your daughter's only three once, you know, Santa only comes when she's three once, so making those memories was really a priority for that time of year. The other thing I would recommend or that I did that worked was taking the lead with entertaining family. So my family is from the East Coast, as Kyle mentioned in the introduction. I'm originally from the Boston area. They came in for Thanksgiving. My wife's family is from Fargo, North Dakota, and they came in for the Christmas holiday. And I basically shouldered all of that in order for my wife to just kind of focus on resting and dealing with the effects of chemo and just not – just take one thing off the list. And that was really effective in the sense that, you know, I could pick people up at the airport, say, hey, here's what we're going to be doing while Angela rests. Or here's what, you know, let's go over here. Let's go down to the park. Let's go do some sledding while Angela rests. I think setting that baseline was important to, and they, I hope they knew this, but, you know, with extended family, you don't really know, especially if someone's never been through a cancer diagnosis before, how much, you know, really goes into the effects of chemo and how much downtime a patient might need. So that helped people understand, hey, you know, this is going to be a little different. Hugh's kind of going to be the main entertainer, and we'll see Angela when we can see her. Third on my list was accept all offers for assistance or help. This was on the advice of my now 92-year-old grandfather. He was 90 at the time, who had, you know, service is kind of a big part of who he is. And he said, you know, one thing I can pass along is that when someone's offering you help at a time like this, be it through a hot meal or taking Audrey to go sledding or to the park or anything, they want you to say yes. They don't, it's not an empty gesture. You know, when someone finds out that you're going through something that's, you know, world-altering and very serious, they're not just going to extend, you know, the let me know if you need anything generically. You know, if someone says, hey, can I bring over some chili for you guys today? Or you know, does Audrey want to come play and you can get some Christmas shopping done? And I just said yes to all of that stuff. And it made so much, such a difference with me keeping my own sanity, and it allowed even more downtime for Ange to rest and kind of clear her head and things like that, without the busyness of a house. So accepting all offers for help was a big one. And then last on my list was we kept cancer and her fight at the front burner, because there's so much that can go into the holiday season between people coming and going, getting Christmas cards out the door, wrapping presents, sending packages across the country to family, whatever it might be, making big meals. But at no point was it, you know, I got to get these Christmas cards stamped. Honey, can you kind of drive yourself to treatment or anything like that? It was always, hey, what you're going through is always number one here, and the rest kind of takes care of itself.
Excellent, Hugh. Thank you for that. And then I will also talk about some of the things that I've done that worked, to give a little more background into my caregiving situation. 8 years ago, the day before Thanksgiving, my spouse was diagnosed with metastatic colon cancer. And so that first bullet point there, that Thanksgiving was the next day, and we said we're not coming to the event that was already set up. We just got this terrible news, and then we had some folks, specifically her dad, who were really pushing back, like, you need to be around family. And that started off as a graceful no, and then it got a little less graceful. We weren't ready for that, and so we just didn't engage. Letting go of my inner Clark Griswold, I think of this as more like simplifying You know, I used to do the lights so much that my neighbors would complain that they were too bright, and I didn't completely abandon the lights over the years, but they've become way less and way more simple. Creating an itinerary and sticking to it, I travel to, my family is in Houston, Texas, and that's where they all are. And so I always had a challenge with seeing everyone and having certain people feel like we were spending too much time in one place and not in another. And that pressure seemed to increase with the cancer diagnosis. Everybody wanted a bigger piece of us, it felt like. So just in advance of the trip, creating an itinerary, this is where we're going to be on this day for this long, and then and so on and so forth, and then sticking to that really helped. And then lastly, personal mission statements. As I sat back and thought about the people in my life and what my mission was with them, one of the things that came out of that was being more connected between the holidays. Certain people, calling them once a week that are far away, others once a month, or just connecting with them. And I've found that that practice or habit has taken the pressure off the holidays for me, where I used to feel like that's where it all happened. And now coming into the holidays, the pressure feels less. So now we'll shift to some things we wish we'd done differently, and we'll kick it over to Hugh again.
Thanks, Kyle. So I just had two main things that came to my mind. The first was building in some time for myself to prepare for, the tasks that come with hosting a holiday. What I did at the time was basically worked full and then tried to reserve nights and weekends and stuff to get that stuff done. And you just forget that there's just everyone is trying to get everything accomplished this time of year, really on the evenings and weekends. So couple that with having the three-year-old at the time, and it was one of my main wishes was there would just be more hours in the day. So in hindsight, I would certainly recommend anyone going through something like this now to, if possible, take off just days for yourself where you can have a stretch of time to just get things done without, either trucking your kids around with you or having to worry about being someplace. If at all possible, just take more time for yourself and work through your to-do list as best you can. And the second was kind of going back to my first slide, really lay out what's going on to those who are going to be in your home or at a party or wherever you might be with your spouse at the time, in the sense that, look, we're happy to have you, but there might be a time where we might ask you to go run a chore or take a walk or something like that, just to give everyone a little space if someone's not feeling well or anything like that. I think with the benefit of hindsight, you being the caregiver or the person who lives or the person fighting cancer has a good understanding of what you're going through. Those who you don't see all the time do not. So if it's very beneficial, I would say, to just say, hey, here's what a typical day looks like right now. I just want you to know that. It's nothing personal. If I ask I'm not trying to be terse. I'm just trying to say, this is something that I need right now. So I would certainly recommend kind of laying out what your life is like for those who you haven't seen, and maybe since the last holidays, or going to Kyle's point, or you don't see very often at all, and you might just see once a year. So those were my two for this slide.
Excellent. Thank you, Hugh. And then I'll go next here. Some first one there, just letting others be the magic, and that's similar, if not the same, as asking for help. But I just kind of reframe it in that the help is oftentimes, the fun part. And so not trying to own everything myself. so to speak. The second one, get the kids more involved on the work end of the holidays. I think my vision in the past was always making these magical moments where the kids walked in and everything was done and perfect and beautiful, and I've gotten a little less attached to that outcome and more about getting them involved in the process of making these memories, unpacking the stuff out of the attic, the whole thing. So that's been helpful. Eating, drinking less, I don't know why we do it. We know it doesn't make us feel better to drink and eat more suddenly in this time of year. Why do I do it? I don't know. It's getting better, but it's still a challenge. Not completely abandoning routines that I know help me stay sane. One is I take at least a 45-minute walk every day with my dog, and I know I'll have to break from that just from the fact that I'm going to travel, but really being focused on getting back into those habits that help me get through life immediately. And then the last thing, I had a friend really help me recently. I was struggling with going back to see my family, and one of my family members in particular I have a very big values conflict with. And I was just told to love that person. And it just really helped, just thinking about that I'm not trying to fix them. I'm not trying to move them to where I'm at. I'm just going to love them for who they are. And so I wish I'd have done that sooner, and I'm excited to do that better this year. And now we'll turn it over to Dan.
Hi again, everybody. So I alluded to this earlier. Many of these are kind of the opposite of things that we've done well, and they're really, we've done them well this year, and we did them really poorly last year. So I'm, rather than kind of going down the list, I'm going to just talk a little bit about last year. Again, it was our first holiday after diagnosis. And, you know, what we really did is we just went all in on our usual traditions. And we did everything. We even raised the bar on ourselves and crammed in more events and more food. And I think we did that because we thought we had to pack it all in because we didn't know what next year would bring or how Cassie was going to feel. And it wound up just being too much. All of it was too much. And so some of it, as I said before, was the side-by-side comparison to how the tradition used to feel. But we also just wiped ourselves out. And it was really the first time in our 20-plus years of being married that we really wanted the holiday season to be over. And we were so busy, and I think I, in particular, tried to compensate for Cassie's diminished energy level by putting everything on my shoulders, that what we wound up doing was disconnecting ourselves at the time of year where we want to be most connected. And so, like, I really wish we had done almost everything differently, which is what we're trying to do this year in thinking about the holidays in a very different way, and including this idea of, like, if we do things differently, we open ourselves up to new possibilities. And so we're doing that. And I think the only other thing I would note is, and we learned this last year, and we experienced this again this year, but this time we were prepared for it, is we both crashed after Thanksgiving, physically and emotionally, and especially Cassie. Cassie really crashed. And this year we knew that was going to happen, and so we were prepared for it, and we had built in time for me away from work and time out of town. But preparing for that post-holiday crash is something that I really wish we had done last year, and I'm glad we did this year.
Excellent. Thank you, Dan. So now shifting gears into some things that we continue to struggle with. I put at the top of my list that, you know, like I said, visiting family in Texas is great, but I realized over the years I chose to move away from them. And so that can be just a very draining experience, and maybe it's the guilt because they're all still there and I'm up here in Minnesota. I don't know, but it just continues to be draining, and I just can't imagine not doing it. Travel in general is just stressful for me, especially. I've always said if you want to find people not in the holiday spirit, go to the airport. That's where they're hanging out. And then leaning a smidge too far Grinch these days, I just kind of, even just preparing for this, I thought, you know, I think I've swung too far the other way. And so I wanna up the game a little bit this year, but still with simple things, not a lot of complexity. You know, not different colored lights, all one color, for example. And then clash of values issues. When to engage? You know, that's just I love these people, and I think the cancer diagnosis can really exacerbate these sorts of feelings when you've gone through an experience like cancer. It tends to fundamentally change who you are and how you think about life. And so it's really hard to know when to engage with the folks that your values aren't aligned with, and when to just love them and appreciate them for who they are. Yeah, so then we'll ask Dan to share some things he's struggling with.
We're still struggling with all of it. Really is the short version. You know, the degree to which our life has changed since we learned about the metastatic diagnosis continues to not feel real to us. So around the holidays in particular, you know, it's hard for us not to compare the holidays in our life to what it used to be, to decide which traditions to keep and which to change, and to say no and to slow down. We're both type A personalities. We're both firstborn. We like to help others. We're not great at asking for help ourselves. So we struggle with really with all of that, but we're also making progress with all of it. And one of the things that helps us is we've started to write about what this is like for us as a couple to navigate cancer. We found when Cassie was diagnosed that there were a lot of resources for her. There were a lot of resources for me as a caregiver, but not a lot of resources for us as a couple. So we've started blogging about going through this as a couple, and our blog is at meaningandstuff.com. And I mentioned that because we actually put up a post yesterday about navigating the holidays, because when we identify the things that we're still struggling with, part of what we've learned is we have to get out of our head. And one of the ways we can do that is by writing and sharing what we're going through. So that's what we're trying to do.
Excellent. Thank you, Dan. Again, that's meaningandstuff.com. And a reminder, if you all could be shooting questions to us, we are excited to answer those. And then we'll wrap it up here with Hugh, with the things he's continuing to struggle with.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I think on the first slide, my wife's cancer diagnosis was right in the middle of the holiday season, so those memories are always going to be there. And I think Kyle touched on the fact that, you know, this process going through any type of cancer diagnosis is life altering in many ways. And for me, it's you know, when we decorate the tree or put the lights out on the house, it's certainly this time of year, which is, you know, supposed to be this kind of joyful, fun, happy time of year, if you believe the commercials that you see anyway, reminds me of my wife getting very, very sick. So that's, you know, and that's not going to change. You know, the days get shorter, the it gets colder here in Minnesota, and the Christmas lights go on, and I'm brought back to that time, and I don't think that's ever going to really change. So there is a dichotomy there between the, you know, when the holiday season starts, I also tend to drift back to the time where Angela was sick. And then going back to, you know, what things we did that we worked, you know, we did kind of just continue the our holiday traditions of Christmas Eve dinner with my in-laws and things like that, even despite my wife's diagnosis. So we don't want to skip those. You know, we still want to remember that hopefully just one time holiday season where one of us was sick and include those. Oh, do you remember, you know, when you were three and your Uncle Joe was doing magic tricks and your mom was sleeping on the couch, you know, those type of things. Those memories still count. It's not like it didn't happen, but they are different. You know, it was a very different time for everyone closely involved, but they're still part of the overall kind of journey and story and tradition. So working those in despite their unpleasantness is when you compare it to, you know, this year so far is different, but it's something that'll always be a work in progress for me.
Excellent. Thank you, Hugh. And I want to thank Hugh and Dan both for the work that they put into this. And we have just left some time here for Q&A. We hope to hear from the audience and you can direct questions to one of us or all of us. We're here to help.
Well, and we actually do have some questions. So one of the questions that we received very early on, and you kind of addressed this, but maybe you could speak, one of you could speak more to this. It was, if someone is going through treatment during the holidays, do you address it or go on like everything is fine? So I've heard a couple different tactics, but does anybody have any insights that you'd like to share? Maybe a story that there was avoidance and that worked or didn't work, or the opposite?
Dan, you want to take that?
Sure, though I'm also interested in Hugh's perspective. You know, so Cassie's treatment, now that she's been diagnosed metastatic, will be ongoing. And one of the things we've had to do, not just around the holidays, but also outside of the holidays, is share with our friends and family what her treatment cycle looks like, because she just has different energy at different times in it. So we've chosen to share that with close friends and family, the adults in our friends and family. We don't have kids, but we have lots of nieces and nephews. And then we let their parents decide what they're going to share with their kids and how. But, you know, especially Aunt Cassie has less energy than she used to have, especially depending when it is in her treatment cycle. And so we really feel we have to be clear about that and manage it. So that's the choice we've made, is to kind of share where things are, where she is in her treatment cycle, because it repeats every month, and the further into it she gets, the less energy she has.
Should I chime in here, Kyle?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. So our approach was more of a need-to-know approach, and what I mean by that is anyone who my wife in particular would see with some frequency was looped in, and that includes, you know, daycare teachers, neighbors, you know, people who she goes to her appointments with, obviously close family, anyone who is coming into our house, be it my friends or hers or both of our friends, were told. But I deferred to her largely as to, you know, how expansive do you want to make this in terms of telling people, and you know, in the age of social media, obviously there you have the ability to tell 1,000 people with one post, depending on, you know, how many connections you might have on Facebook or what have you. But for up until pretty much the spring and certainly through the holiday season, we did not really tell anyone who wasn't kind of in the direct periphery of ourselves. Because, you know, my wife with chemo, she lost her hair. So people could draw their own conclusions and things like that. But that's kind of how we approached it. And I think that was helpful in the sense that it alleviates people, you know, feeling the need to ask questions, especially if it's someone like a daycare teacher at pickup. Obviously, there's a change of an appearance and a less frequent seeing. So they know that something's going on, but, you know, out of courtesy, they're not going to say, hey, you know, what's going on? So I do think people appreciated being looped in, but there was a line in the sand for us, at least for the first half of her fight, I would say. It was more of a need-to-know basis.
Yeah, and I'll elaborate a little, too, on it's not something that I ever did, but one of our members shared it with us, and it was coming up to a family reunion, which I think is really what we're talking about here when we're talking about the holidays. He came to this conclusion that what he needed to do was create sort of a, okay, everybody gather round moment, and we're going to talk the cancer talk, and this is your opportunity to hear that story, and then we're really asking that you don't we don't get asked about nothing but cancer during this reunion, because there are other parts of us and other things going on in our lives. And so I think the feedback I got from him was that strategy worked, that it prevented him from and his partner from having the conversation 20 or 30 times. You know, of course, I'm sure it didn't completely eliminate it, and I don't know that they wanted to. They just didn't want their holiday or their family reunion to be defined by that cancer diagnosis.
Great insight from all of you. I appreciate that. A few more questions. Dan, I believe you mentioned that you had a bit of Clark Griswold in you. And so I think that was you. And you talked about lowering the bar. And if you're lowering the bar from Clark, I would say that's probably normalizing things. But can you tell me just a little bit more what that meant to you?
I think Kyle was the Clark. Griswold.
but Dan was the one that lowered the expectation.
Yeah.
I think it's maybe a little of both of
them. I think it just might be helpful to for some practical advice on easy things to do, what that would mean.
Yeah. You know, for us, it's we're not going out in the woods and cutting down a tree and strapping it to our car and all of that, and spending a lot of money and time on the decorations and the food. You know, we really simplified that, I think, with really getting everyone enrolled in it, you know, not trying to place the burden on one particular group or another, and not, you know, even explicitly sort of saying we're just having, like, this chili meal, you know, bring chili, things like that, even moving away from turkey entirely with Thanksgiving and some of the traditional trappings that comes with. But that's us. I don't know that that's right for everyone, but always just, is there a simpler way to do this? And it still be something that we can enjoy.
So that makes a lot. That makes a lot of sense. Yep.
The only thing I would add is we started this year with the question of, what's most important to us for the holidays. And when we went into Thanksgiving, our answer was, we want to stay connected because we hadn't been connected last year, and we do better when we're connected. And so then we worked backwards from that, which is, all right, what are we going to have to do to stay connected? Well, we want to take a nap together in the middle of the day. All right, well, that means we're going to cook less. So we, you know, didn't make any pies this year. We asked people to bring the pies. We cut 3 dishes from our menu and just said, we're going back to basics. And when we sent the email out to everyone who was coming for Thanksgiving, we said that, we're going back to basics. We let everyone know, and we said in that email, we are going to need more help, and we're going to ask people to do more things than they've done in the past. But it all started from having clarity about actually what we wanted, which was to stay connected rather than what we didn't want.
I think those are great specific pieces of advice that people can use right away. So I really appreciate that. Taking a little bit off that and what you've talked about before with saying no, did any of you, besides the word no, did you find a certain approach or specific words that worked best with family or friends? Or I know that you try to kind of probably soften that in some cases, and maybe it wouldn't be so direct, but wondering if you found words that specifically worked really well with people that mattered to you.
I'll start. I don't know. I can't think of any words, but specifically just explaining why, you know, that why that is. And then, or another way to think about that is maybe what yes did that no provide? And so, like in the case of Dan, the story he just told, you know, not cooking all those things allowed him and Cassie to take a nap together. So, you know, who's going to get upset about that? So I think just explaining the yes that the no provides, and, you know, it's not something that people, I think, know what to expect to hear, you know, when you're dealing with cancer. So I don't know, Dan or Hugh, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I can chime in quickly and kind of echo your point a little bit. And I don't have a specific phrase I remember, but I do think people appreciated being given the benefit of the doubt. So I would usually approach saying no or not at this time, or, you know, this is not something that we can handle with, you know, I understand you're trying to help and I know that you know what's going on, but that was kind of the way I would approach those things and make sure it certainly wasn't personal or it had anything to do with the requestor, you know, at all. It was just, you know, there's a lot going on and this is not something that we can handle right now.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add is we find ourselves saying a lot, thank you, we wish we could, but. And the but is usually we're too tired or Cassie's wiped out or, you know, we're just not able to. But, you know, people are usually really well-meaning, and so we're always trying to thank them and be gracious, but be really clear about our but.
Thank you for that. I think when people are exhausted and just trying to navigate through this through the first time, sometimes it's just easy to have some words provided. So we appreciate that. Two last questions. Kyle, you mentioned example of your personal mission statements. Can you talk a little bit more about that and put some more words to that? Just an example of one maybe that you used and how it helped.
Yeah, I'm, you know, specifically thinking about when I think about my parents and, you know, what is my mission with those people. You know, I create them for everyone, and I'm even just looking to reference one here. With my dad, let's see, improve the quality of time I have with him to be more present and better handoffs. So, you know, it's just really the practice is thinking about that person or maybe your role as a sibling and, you know, what is my mission in that role? I'm spending time doing it. What has it done well look like? And so it helped me, I think, for some folks who prior to going through that exercise were in that quote-unquote inner loop. And as I went through that loop of people that I had a mission statement for got smaller because I just realized I didn't have the capacity to have a really bold mission with lots and lots of people. So I don't know if that answered the question.
That did. Thank you. And then you, going back to one of your topics that you covered, you were talking about taking the lead and being the main entertainer and how much energy that takes. I'm wondering if you have learned or could share any self-care that you did after doing that after a season or during the season that particularly helped you navigate through that.
Absolutely. Well, first, I'd like to thank Coffee for for helping me. But really what I did, and this was getting to be week 8. So my wife's treatment was basically 12 rounds of weekly treatments, and then she went to an every other treatment for another 8 weeks. So it was a 16 rounds total. And she was at week 7 or 8 of her weekly treatments. And around week 6, once the house was quiet, so once she was asleep, once our daughter was asleep, I, regardless of how cold it was, I would just make myself get outside and go for a walk. And I think Kyle mentioned this too with his dog. And that was just my own time. And I didn't even know it at the time. It's not like I put on my calendar, you'll make time for yourself. But I realized how much that walk ended up helping just decompress the day, regardless if it was a good or a bad day, busy day at work, not a busy day, weekend day, whatever. I always went out. And that would be my main piece of advice. Carve in some time for yourself wherever you can. And it doesn't have to be physical activity necessarily either. You know, if there's a show you like to watch or, you know, music you like to listen to, just give yourself 45 minutes to an hour of your own time, if your schedule can allow it, and just let yourself decompress, because if you don't, you end up with the snowball effect of the hard day yesterday rolls into today, rolls into tomorrow, and eventually you kind of lose sight of who you are and your center. So I do think even a small amount of time for yourself each and every day goes a long way as you're battling with your partner.
Kyle or Dan, have anything to add to that?
No, I thought it was great.
It was great, and I would just echo what Hugh said, and specifically, I think we talked, or maybe there's a misconception that when the stress is gone, like our family, for example, maybe left the house, when that stress is gone, that the stressor is gone, or that the stress itself is no longer present with us, and it actually is. It's in our bodies. It's in our minds, and so taking that time for that walk or that space for yourself is a great way to get that stress out of your body, out of your mind. And just because the stress, it's the people or whatever caused that are gone, doesn't mean it's not still in you.
Well, thank you so much. Gracious thanks to our speakers, Kyle Woody, Hugh Mulligan, and Dan Kramer, and to everyone for joining us today. Again, please share what you learned today via our social media channels, and we look forward to seeing you on the next webinar. Thanks, everyone.